Welcome, everyone. My name is Leslie Ann Moore, and I am going to read to you my first novel entitled Griffin's Daughter. Prologue. A spell is cast, a child is born. Part 1. On the crest of a small hill, a woman stood alone, gazing off into the distance. She was dressed for battle, her once bright armor now grimed with mud and gore. A broadsword hung at her left hip. The woman and the blade were old comrades, having seen many a battle in their time together, but never had they witnessed such a slaughter as this. The unmoving results littered the plain below. Grotesque shapes lay twisted in the churned earth, the corpses of creatures too horrible and unnatural to be of this world. The woman's hair, unfettered by helmet or ties, streamed out from her head like black banners snapping in the wind. A pall of weariness hung about her, stooping her shoulders slightly under its gray weight. Her pale, still face contrasted sharply with her green eyes, which burned with a fierce intensity, mirroring her thoughts. How has it come to this? How? We must succeed, or goddess help us all. A soft ahem from behind broke her melancholy reverie. The sounds of an army settling in for the night now brushed against her awareness, like a great beast at her back. She turned. "Highness," the man said, ducking his head in a quick salute. He was slightly out of breath and clearly agitated. "What is it, soldier?" she replied. She took a step forward to see the messenger more clearly in the rapidly diminishing light. "Lady Junko has returned. The Carians await you at your tent." She ran. Her heart slammed against her breastbone as if it would tear itself free and fly from her chest. Terror bayed at her heels. What if Junko has failed? Well, then, we were all dead. Men and women threw themselves from her path, upending plates of food and spilling mugs of hot tea, but yelps of outrage were quickly stifled when they realized who had torn through their midst. She saw none of it. Her vision tunneled down to a single point as all thoughts crystallized into one. The ring. She skidded to a halt in front of a tent that was larger, though no less plain than its neighbors, and set apart by an open space. Two soldiers stood guard on either side of the doorway. They saluted briskly. She paused for a moment to catch her breath and gather her composure. She closed her eyes and offered a silent prayer to the goddess. A soft buzz of voices fell silent as she entered. A group of people stood in a loose huddle around a camp stool, upon which sat a young woman. The woman rose to her feet, and the entire group bowed their heads in obeisance. A white-haired man stepped forward, his age and great air of authority clearly marking him as their leader. "Princess Sukyo, Lady Junko has returned successful. We have the ring." Sukyo breathed out a long sigh and closed her eyes. She felt as if she would fly apart at any moment, her entire body drawn up tight as a bowstring. She didn't realize she was swaying on her feet until she felt the steadying hand of Master Aiku under her elbow. She put a trembling hand to her forehead. "When did I last eat?" she wondered. "I must sit for a moment," she murmured. Master Aiku steered her to the just-vacated camp stool. She sat, and someone immediately handed her an ornate silver goblet. The clean, sweet smell of her favorite wine tickled her nostrils. She took a long pull and wiped her lips with the back of her hand in a very unprincess-like manner, frowning at the grime she saw caked there. She was a soldier as well as a princess, and right now she felt bone-weary, filthy, and she reeked of the battlefield. She desired nothing more than a hot bath and deep, dreamless sleep, but she knew she would have neither this night. "Master Aiku," Sukyo began. "Highness, we have very little time. Your father..." "Knows, master. He already knows. Of that you can be sure." Despite his advanced age, the master of the Kyrian society stood straight and tall, the ruby eye of Lajdala upon his breast, symbol of his high office, gleamed softly in the mellow light of the oil lamps. His long white hair hung in a single, neat plait down his back. Stern-faced and somber in his black robes, nevertheless he inspired feelings of comfort and safety in Sukyo. She trusted him completely. "My fellows and I must begin this spell immediately, hope to succeed. There is no time to prepare you. I fear that your strength is depleted after this terrible day's work." "I am strong enough." "I have to be," Sukyo replied. "The ring, let me have it." Master Raikou placed it into her upturned palm. It felt cold, so cold, and yet it burned her skin, searing the flesh without leaving any mark. She could barely stand to hold it, but she could not release it either. "This is my father's ring. There is blood on it." Sukyo looked first to Master Raikou, then to Lady Junko. "How did you get this from my father?" she questioned, her voice sharp. Junko came forward and knelt before Sukyo. She was very young, but her eyes were already hard and sad. "I cut off his finger, Highness," she replied matter-of-factly. "I drugged his wine. I'm the only one he trusts these days, or trusted. When he fell asleep, I tried pulling it off, but it wouldn't come, so..." She fell silent. Sukyo closed her eyes and struggled to keep from retching. The bitter taste of bile stung her mouth, and her skin prickled as if 1,000 spiders had worked their way under her armor, trapping themselves beneath her clothing. Junko, because of her position as the king's favored concubine, was the only one who could get close enough to him to steal the ring, and even so, she could not have succeeded without the help of the Kyrians. Junko did what she had to do, but goddess, did she have to cut off his finger! A dark anger settled over Sukyo, dense and cold. Junko must have seen it in her face, for she backed away quickly, putting Master Aiku between herself and the princess. Sukyo stood up abruptly, overturning the stool. She glanced down at the cowering concubine. Shaira Anjara, practitioner of the vilest form of magic, brutal and despotic though he had become, was still her father. He had once been a loving and attentive parent, adored by his only daughter, until the lust for power twisted him into the beast that she now stood against. Still. "He is my father," the hurt child with her cried. "This girl cut off my father's finger." "Get a hold of yourself, Sukyo. She did what had to be done, by whatever means necessary. She assumed a terrible risk, and she succeeded. Now you have the white griffin ring in your possession, the only thing that may keep you alive and free your people. If the spell could be completed in time." "He is coming," Master Raikou breathed. The eldest Kyrian stood with his head cocked slightly to one side, like an old hound that has caught the scent of danger. The others stood very still, bodies taut, eyes unfocused, if they, too, could feel the approach of the king like a great onrushing storm. Sukyo cried out in pain as the ring enclosed within her fist burned with such sudden intensity that she had to drop it to the floor, where it lay shining with a white light like a star fallen from the heavens. Quick as a striking serpent, Master Aiku snatched up the ring. Its cold fire did not seem to affect the old sorcerer. "Highness, we must act now, or all is lost. For the elven people, you must be strong through what is to come. They will need a queen when this is finished." For a brief moment, Sukyo hesitated. What choice had she, really? She must either go along with the Kyrians, or face another day in which she watched while brave men and women fought and died, torn apart by an army of loathsome and unnatural creatures called up from the depths of the void by her father's vile magic. No, she hadn't any choice at all. She nodded once, decisively. "Let's do it, then, and be done." "Hold on to my sleeve, princess," the master instructed. "If you've never teleported before, it can be very disorienting. You may be quite dizzy when we arrive." "Where are we going?" Sukyo asked. "To the only place where he will not hold the advantage," replied the master. "The stronghold of the Kyrians. The Black Tower." Sukyo swallowed hard and tried to stop shaking. Her mouth tasted of ashes. She took hold of Master Raikou's elbow as instructed. Beneath the heavy black fabric, the muscles of his arm felt hard, more like those of a warrior's than a magician's. Still holding fast to the ring in his left hand, he raised his right hand and traced a glyph in the air before him. He spoke a single word, and the glyph became visible, a softly glowing silver tangle of lines, meaningless to Sukyo's untrained eye. The other Kyrians obviously knew their part, for they all gathered close, surrounding Master Raikou, Sukyo, and now Junko, who had wormed her way into the center of the group and stood with her back pressed against the princess's. The mages began to chant softly, rapidly. The air within the tent started to crackle and pop with energy. Sukyo felt the bare skin of her face and hands begin to prickle unpleasantly, as if she were being stung by nettles. Just as the prickling intensified into true pain, Master Iku spoke three words loudly, in rapid succession, closed his fist, and pulled downward. The room folded in on itself. Part 2. Sukiyo's mind couldn't quite interpret what her body had just experienced. One moment, she had stood with the Kyrians, surrounded by the canvas walls of her tent. The next, she hurtled through freezing darkness to land upon hard stone, dizzy and sick. Her knees buckled, and she would have fallen, but a pair of strong arms encircled her waist, holding her firmly until she could stand again. "My thanks, Master Iku," she murmured, pushing herself gently out of the embrace of the old mage. She glanced around her. The group had alighted in a small room, barely large enough to contain them all. The walls were constructed of wood, the floor of stone. The corner still crackled with the blue fire of dissipating magical energy. A single doorway opened onto a dimly lit corridor. "Come, everyone," the master called. "We must go to the spell chamber and activate the wards. Quickly!" He turned and rushed out of the room into the corridor. The other Kyrians followed en masse, their black robes flapping like the wings of crows, sweeping both Sukiyo and Junko along in their midst. "Hurry! He comes!" Master Iku shouted over his shoulder, and for the first time, Sukiyo thought she heard a note of fear in the mage's voice. They ran now, fleeing ever downward through a series of corridors and down staircases illuminated by softly glowing globes set into the walls at regular intervals. Master Iku still held fast to the ring. Sukiyo could see his left hand ablaze with the cold starfire of the ring's terrible energy, and she marveled at the master's strength that he could withstand its dreadful power. At last, Master Iku skidded to a halt in front of a set of massive double doors fashioned of highly polished black stone. Sukiyo gasped in wonder at the sight of them. Glyphs and sigils covered their mirrored surfaces, and to her eyes they seemed to move, swimming like a school of fantastic fish that alternately surfaced, then retreated into the inky depths of a dark, still pond. The master spoke a word of command, and the door swung inward, with a great rush of air, as if no atmosphere had existed within the chamber until the instant the doors opened. Despite their previous haste, the Kyrians entered the room slowly, reverently. This place, their inner sanctum, lay at the very heart of the fortress known as the Black Tower. Here, the Kyrian society performed its most powerful workings. Here, they would work the spell of sundering, which would separate the key that unlocked the power of the Griffin Ring from the ring itself. They would then attempt something that could only be described as an act of desperation. It would take every particle, every last bit of the collective energy of all of the Kyrians to perform this working, with no guarantee of success. No one in living memory had ever tried such a feat, and the elves had very long memories. If they succeeded, a hole would open up in the very fabric of time itself. Through this portal, the key would be cast into the living body of a person not yet born, a person of the blood royal, a descendant of the House of Anjara. The divinations had already been performed. The House of Anjara would endure, and there would be living members 1,000 years hence. Theoretically, the spell should work. If it failed, they would all die. The Kyrians, having drained themselves dry, would have nothing left with which to battle the vengeful fury of a sorcerer king betrayed by his one-time allies. Sukiyo could expect to suffer an especially bitter fate as the treacherous child who dared to turn against her own father and aim to set herself in his place. Worse than anything Sukiyo's father could do to her would be the suffering of the elven people. Their pain would be everlasting. The spell had to work. The door swung shut with a soft whoosh, sealing the room. The octagonal chamber had been cut from the living rock upon which the fortress stood. Its walls were made of the same polished black stone as the doors. Here, too, were the drifting symbols, giving Sukiyo the impression of being in a glass-walled room submerged in black water. No symbols marred the dark perfection of the floor. In the exact center of the room, affixed to a square base, rested a slab, also fashioned of black stone. It stood at a height to make it comfortable as an altar or work table, measuring as long as the height of an average elven man, and about 3 times as wide as that same man's body. Upon it rested many objects that Sukiyo took to be tools of the sorcerer's craft. Master Iku stepped over the table, and dropped the ring onto a bronze bowl, then fell back and folded his left hand into his right, hissing with pain. "Master!" Aiku cried out in alarm. Two of his fellows supported him as he doubled over, chest heaving. Sukiyo knelt beside the stricken mage, her throat clogged with fear. "The magic for the ring is very potent, especially with the king so near. It is a wonder I was able to hold on to it for so long," the old mage said through gritted teeth. He stood straight once more, having mastered the pain, and unfurled his clenched fingers. Where the ring had contacted his palm, a blackened hole gaped, seared into the master's flesh by the ring's power. No blood seeped from the wound. The tissues had been cauterized by the intense energy. "Master, you must let us tend to your hand," one of the Kyrians, a woman of middle years whose name escaped Sukiyo, said. "No, there's no time," Master Aiku replied, his voice full of urgency. "This wound is nothing compared to what I and the rest of us will suffer if we do not accomplish what we must this night. I will bind up my hand if I can find a bit of cloth and make do."
"Master, please take this."
Junko stepped forward and proffered a red silk ribbon that, moments before, had bound back her waist-length golden hair. Master Aiku took the ribbon with a word of thanks and began wrapping it tightly about his injured hand. Junko, eyes lowered deferentially, backed away and retreated into a corner of the room where she then sat, back pressed against the unyielding stone. Sukiyo knew little about her father's favorite concubine, other than that she was very young and came from the north. The princess wondered just what the Kyrians had offered her to betray her master and king. Perhaps sharing the king's bed and receiving his favor had not been enough for this ambitious girl. Perhaps she had desired much, much more. And then, when she could not get what she craved, her mind had turned to treachery. Sukiyo shook her head in frustrated anger. None of this was Junko's fault. "She is a victim of father's evil, just as we all are. Your problem is that you still love him. You would run to him and fall into his arms without a second thought. All he would have to do is speak a kind word, and all of the horrors of the last 3 years would be forgotten. That is, until he slit your throat for betraying him." She had to stay focused. Her survival and that of the elven nation depended on it. Master Aiku had finished wrapping his hand and now stood at the stone table, the bronze cauldron containing the griffin ring before him. The light from the ring still blazed, throwing the upper half of the elder Kyrian's face into eerie shadow, making of it a bizarre, featureless mask. The others stood to either side of their leader, arms raised, palms turned outward. Master Aiku spoke a single word, and the aimlessly drifting symbols in walls and doors began to swirl and dart, forming themselves into linear patterns, which then froze into place. Sukiyo could now see that they had formed what looked to be the sentences of a massive text, written in a language unknown to her. The Kyrians began to chant. A sudden wave of concussive force hit the chamber like an enormous hammer blow, throwing everyone off balance. The chanting faltered for an instant, then resumed with even greater speed. Another shock wave rocked the chamber a heartbeat later, sending a fine powder of rock dust pattering to the floor. Blue-white fireballs of energy sprang to being in all eight corners of the room. Sukiyo heard Junko scream as the concubine flung herself out of the way. The energy balls raced along the floor toward the center of the room, leaving burning trails in their wakes, which shone in the semi-darkness like the spokes of a giant wheel. They met and coalesced under the base of the stone table. The entire structure lit up, becoming as transparent as rock crystal. Upon the glowing coals of the lit brazier, Master Aiku cast a handful of powder. Tendrils of spicy smoke curled up into the supercharged air, tickling Sukiyo's nostrils. Abruptly, the chanting ceased. The energy in the room thrummed with such intensity, Sukiyo could barely remain standing. Out of the corner of her eye, she saw Junko, collapsed upon the floor like a discarded doll wrapped in a pile of silken rags. Master Aiku, a fine sheet of sweat upon his brow, clapped his hands together 3 times and spoke a single word. To the uninitiated, a word of power was felt rather than heard. Sukiyo squeezed her head in her hands, fighting to remain conscious as the word blasted her mind and body like the sonorous voice of a great bell. A sphere of energy manifested inside the bronze cauldron. Master Aiku slowly raised his hands, and the sphere followed until it hovered at eye level. The ring floated within. Still off balance from the residual effects of the word of power, Sukiyo fell to the floor as a third massive shockwave hit the chamber. She stared in stunned disbelief as the seemingly solid stone of the doors bulged inwards,
as if their substance had been somehow fundamentally altered, making them more like clay than rock. Somehow the Sphyrians remained standing, all 13 pairs of eyes fixed upon the ring. A steady shower of rock dust sifted down from the ceiling. Sunko coughed as the fine grit worked its way into her throat and lungs. She scrambled to her feet and whirled to face the deforming doors, drawing her sword because her warrior's instinct compelled her to fight, even against impossible odds. The room shook steadily now. The Kyrians began a new chant, this one slow and deliberate, each word a word of power. Sukyo moaned in pain, struggling to keep a grasp on both sword and consciousness. The words kept a steady beat in rhythm to the synchronized pulses of the mentally joined sorcerers. Sukyo heard a loud pop and turned in time to see the ring fall through the sphere back into the cauldron, its light extinguished. That light now burned within the sphere itself with such intensity that Sukyo could not look directly at it. In a moment of clarity, she realized that the magic of the key had been separated from the ring and placed within the sphere. "Princess," Master Raikou called out, "we require you now." Sukyo moved as quickly as she dared, fighting to keep her balance. She slipped into the circle of magicians beside Master Raikou, who indicated that she should hold out her hand. She braced herself for what she knew would come next. The master had briefed her only this morning on how the Kyrians would form the link to the future on Jara. The magical principle was based on the blood tie between the generations that stretched unbroken down through the years, connecting Sukyo with her descendant. Her living blood would catalyze the spell that would open a hole in the fabric of time, allowing contact with the target. The Kyrians would then cast the key through the hole and into the body of its new host, thus effectively sealing it off from the king's control. Without the power of the Griffin Ring at his disposal, Shaira on Jara could no longer command his armies. The foul creatures he had conjured up from the void were compelled to serve him by the magic of the ring. Freed from that compulsion, they would be thrown into disarray and made far more vulnerable. Sukyo's forces would then have a chance to defeat them, and perhaps some semblance of victory could be won from the disaster of the rebellion. Bereft of his deadliest weapon, the king himself would also be weakened, giving the beleaguered Kyrians a chance to neutralize his magic. Sukyo had made Master Aiku swear to her that if they ultimately succeeded in bringing her father down, the Kyrians would find a way to imprison rather than kill him. She still loved him, despite everything. The floor heaved sharply. Sukyo gasped in dismay as the solid stone of the walls began to ripple in glistening black waves. "He is unraveling the magic that holds the very substance of the tower together," Master Raikou stated grimly. "Soon the rock will be like putty, unable to hold its shape. We must hurry." He grasped Sukyo's wrist in his left hand and held it over the lighted charcoals of the brazier. In his right hand he held a small ritual blade, poised over Sukyo's waiting flesh. He closed his eyes and began to intone the opening verse of the spell. Master Aiku spoke rapidly, the words running together in a continuous buzz of sound. The other Kyrians stood silently, eyes closed, brows furrowed. Some perspired heavily, others betrayed the intensity of their effort with barely a twitch of an eyelid or lip. Oddly, despite the chaos of the dissolving room, the group seemed locked in a bubble of stillness, shielded from the worst of the punishing energy blasts directed at them by their enemy. Sukyo spared a quick moment of concern for Junko, still sprawled unmoving in a corner. She hoped the girl could survive the coming storm. The chant reached a crescendo as Master Aiku shouted out the last word. Sukyo's head exploded in noise and white light. Simultaneously, she felt a searing pain lance across her left palm. She cried out and felt herself slumping to the floor, where darkness enveloped her like a velvet cocoon. Here ends part two of Prologue of Griffin's Daughter.